Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Hello and welcome to Engage for Success Radio and show number 540 in our weekly series. Engage for Success is a not-for-profit movement and the UK's leading voice on the topic of employee engagement. We're out there raising awareness and running events through our area networks right around the country. And our topic and sector-specific thought and action groups are developing research, publishing case studies, and shining a light on all the great practice that's going on. Now, you can visit engageforsuccess.org to learn more. And while you're there, why not sign up for our weekly newsletter so you never miss out on any of our great free resources, events, and all the updates. And I'm Andy Gorham. I'm your host for today's show, the founder of BizJuicer, an employee engagement and culture development consultancy that helps companies create people change that sticks and retains more of their great people and ensures a fabulous brand experience for their customers. And today's episode is, I think, set to be a thought-provoking exploration into the realm of psychological safety. And I'm thrilled to have Tom Geraghty, the CEO of Iterum, with us here today to explore this important topic today. Now, in a world where the pace of change demands constant adaptation, where traditional team dynamics have been and continue to be adjusted to, where the need for innovation and the ability to encourage and harness ideas from everyone is of increasing importance, and where retention of a diverse workforce is set firmly in the crosshairs of many businesses, this all comes at a time where stress and burnout seem to be on the up and resilience is really up against it. So taking time out to consider how to create an environment where employees feel safe and empowered to show up, stand up and speak out is probably time well spent. With Tom's help today, hopefully we can find a few nuggets to put ourselves and our people in a better place to deal with it all. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you, Andy. It's great to be here.
Lovely to have you here, my friend. Really, really nice to have you here today. I'm really interested to hear your perspective on psychological safety. Very, very hot topic indeed. But before we run headlong into that, how about just take a breath and just introduce yourself to everybody a little bit so we can understand your background and what you're focused on today.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks, Andy. Yeah, so my background. So my background originally, many years ago, even maybe decades ago, is originally in ecology, so ecological research and science stuff, and I spent a few years doing that, and then sort of roundabout turn of events ended up in technology, managing doing tech. I was an infrastructure engineer. Then I started to manage teams, manage software engineering teams and ops teams, and then became CIO and CTO of various firms, including little startups, little tech startups, and large global enterprises and pharmaceutical firms and stuff. Through that journey, through the exploration into managing teams and developing teams and stuff like that, I became and I remained passionate about creating the conditions in which teams can thrive, not just trying to get people to do their best work, but making sure the environment sustain their ability to do their best work. And that's and through that journey, I think around 2015 or so, I came across the term psychological safety when watching a short TED talk by Amy Edmondson, and that was for me. Yeah, that was for me my light bulb moment. That was like the moment where I thought, oh, all this stuff has a name. It's got it's called a thing. It's a real thing. Whereas I thought I was just trying to do stuff. I didn't really have a name for it. I was just trying to do the right stuff. And that was the moment when it all came together. And so then I started to, I probably got a bit evangelical about it and so started to talk about it and write blogs about it and do conference talks and meetups and stuff and started banging the drum of psychological safety. And that was for me the sort of, when all the doors opened and from there I had a few more jobs, but then, over the past few years, it's now a fully fledged business. I'm a professional psychological safety geek, which is awesome. It's great fun. And in fact, we're out in, so right now we're out in Canada, we're out in Alberta district, we're working with a lot of different school districts and educators out here, improving psychological safety for teachers and educators. So sort of working on partly classroom, but mostly what we might call a staff room, sort of the psychological safety between peers and colleagues in education, which is super interesting. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's some transition. Although listening to your career, there's clearly a link there throughout about thriving environments, whether they be scientific environments, IT environments, people environments. And it's hard not to get evangelical when you listen to Amy Evans tonight. So I concur with all of those things. We are big fans of people geeks here on the radio show. So listen, that you're in good company, my friend. You're in great company.
Good to know.
Let's get stuck into this topic of psychological safety, okay? Psychological safety is, I think, often misunderstood. You hear phrases like creating a comfortable work environment, right? And based on some of the challenges I mentioned in the introduction, how would you, as a fellow geek in this stuff, how would you challenge this notion, right, that it's all about comfort and redefine psychological safety for teams that seek genuine innovation and growth?
Yeah, so this is, you're absolutely right. We come across quite a lot of common misconceptions about psychological safety in our work. A lot of our work goes towards challenging and addressing some of those misconceptions because probably the biggest one is that psychological safety is about being comfortable. It's about it's about wrapping people in cotton wool and making sure they're never challenged or there's no conflict and things like that. And that's absolutely not the case. If we go back, so let's geek out for a moment and do a little bit of history because
geek away, my friend.
Yeah, excellent. The term psychological safety itself, as far as we're aware, was first mentioned in the literature in the 1950s by Carl Rogers, a psychiatrist, and he was talking about it in the context of the relationship and the dialogue between therapist and subject and stuff. Then it was used Shine and Warren Bennis when they were talking about organizational change a few years later, mm-hmm. But then for a few decades really, the term didn't really exist. It wasn't really used. Then it had a bit of a resurgence back in the 90s. And a few researchers started using the term, but then Amy Edmondson was the researcher who like to say, codified it. Amy was the person who actually gave it wrapped it in a usable workplace definition that it's a belief that one will not be punished for raising ideas, raising concerns, admitting mistakes, and taking interpersonal risks. And it's this safety, it's a belief that the group is safe for interpersonal risk taking. Now that is sometimes interpreted as a sort of a safe space, in the same way that we might describe, let's say, an Alcoholic Anonymous group, or a survivors of domestic abuse group as a safe space, but it's not. That's a misconception. Psychological safety is in a psychologically safe space. We welcome conflict. We have healthy relationships with conflict. We can address conflict, and we can have open, polite, respectful, productive conflict with each other in the group that results in higher performance. That's hard work, right? Psychological safety isn't necessarily, it's certainly not easy, and it's certainly not comfortable. In fact, it can create an environment, certainly for leaders, where they may feel less comfortable, more uncomfortable, because for many leaders, they've spent years, maybe decades, in environments where either intentionally or unintentionally they've created or they work in environments where they're not challenged. People don't critique the idea of the leader, or they don't challenge the people in higher status roles, or and they don't raise different ideas or suggest different ways of doing things, because that's, you know, that's, I'm doing air quotes, that's not the way we do things around here, you know, that's the sort of thing. So actually for many leaders, it can be less, it can create an environment where it's less comfortable for leadership, because psychological safety means an environment where you can be challenged. You do have to address some of the hard stuff. So it's definitely not a comfortable place. And in fact, it can be even less of a comfortable place for those who are used to the comfort or you know, the cushion of status in an organization.
Yeah, I mean, I look back to works like Patrick Lencioni's, or what I call it, the Pyramid of Trust or whatever, but, you know, that conflict piece is second rung of that pyramid.
Yeah.
And it's about getting comfortable and okay with conflict, if, and it's a very strong term, but disagreements or working things through as a team. I think you're right. That's a big, big factor in high performing teams. So getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, I think, is probably the message within that, right? Within that psychological safety piece.
Sorry, just to pick up on that Lencioni piece.
Yeah.
I think it's so you've touched on such an important piece, because I think, and again, this is a slightly geeky, and this is entirely conjecture on my part. But I believe, because Lencioni did great work with his five dysfunctions of a team and the sort of trust pyramid stuff, believe that at that point, Lencioni was kind of hunting for this idea of psychological safety, but couldn't quite get his hand around the concept enough to give it a name. And because if you read his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, he's almost
great book.
Describing it. Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? When you all of these people, Lencioni, Edmondson, are circulating, if that's even a word, around a key thought here of this being comfortable with being uncomfortable, and not, I think the point you make about Amy Emerson's piece about not feeling like there's going to be any retribution for you saying what you're going to say. You know, that's that honest vulnerability and integrity piece that plays underneath all of this. When we think about what's going on in today's work environment, though, in all of the work that you're doing, Tom, what are some of the unique barriers to implementing this idea of a consistent environment of psychological safety that maybe are the ones that turn up a lot for you because you can see them walking into organizations but go under the radar? And what are these, and how can leaders, I guess, proactively put themselves in a situation to see them and address them before they become systemic issues?
So this is a really good question, and this is kind of the golden question, isn't it?
And I
think this is where, to be honest, I think this is where it helps to think a little bit ecologically and systemically about the environments that we're in and the environments we create. And so there's a few ways to come at this. One is to, so let's start a little bit simplistically and sort of say, let's make the point that what is rewarded gets done or said.
Yeah.
Anything in an organization that is rewarded, you get more of. Anything that's punished gets suppressed. And so that might be suppressed in terms of you get less of it, people do less of the thing that gets punished, or simply you don't hear about it because it happens anyway, but what you're actually punishing is people talking about it or admitting it. You know, if you're punishing mistakes, you'll hear about fewer mistakes. That doesn't mean fewer mistakes are actually happening. It's entirely possible that more mistakes are happening. You're hearing less of them. And I think this is part of the problem that has been endemic through a lot of the 20th century and is still endemic in a lot of organizations and corporations and businesses now, that there's this belief, which is based upon partly experience, that if we punish people for admitting mistakes, if we punish people for making mistakes, if we punish mistakes, we get fewer mistakes, and we perceive that we get higher performance. And in fact, the evidence in front of our eyes and to our ears suggests, you know, confirms that, because we hear about fewer mistakes, fewer bad things happen. But in fact, those bad things are still happening. We're just not hearing about them. So as leaders, we kind of get this confirmation bias of those sorts of behaviors. So we have to remember this: what gets rewarded gets done, and what gets punished gets avoided or suppressed. But reward can be as simple as some thanks, or you know, just or even simple measurement. It doesn't mean bonuses or incentives or you know, actual cash payments or anything. It might do, but it can be as simple as someone saying thank you, or you know, a smile. And punishment can be as severe as someone being sacked or even going to jail for making a mistake or doing something wrong, or it can be as minor as a manager or peer rolling their eyes or shrugging their shoulders and sighing, going, oh, not again. Yeah, that sort of level of punishment, because that suppresses, those sorts of behaviours send very strong signals as well. So there's all those sort of systemic behaviours and structures that we have to recognise that either reward, incentivise, or suppress certain behaviours. We also have to consider the individual. We have to think about what it's like for individual people on a team. After all, we are all individuals. We are teams, but we are all individuals on a team. And so a lot of the measures, a lot of the tools out there to measure psychological safety take a sort of a stance of running a survey and asking for scores and giving an average for a team or a group that's, you know, some sort of score. Like this team scores 3.5 out of 5 in psychological safety.
Mm.
And that tells you something. I'm not entirely sure what that tells you.
Yeah.
It tells you something. Because also that is an average. What the average is doing is hiding the outliers. It's hiding the people that are either very high, that, you know, they're reporting very high or reporting very low psychological safety in that group. And that's something we have to be really aware of. Our stance, so we take a slightly different stance at psychsafety.com, which is that a team is safe as only as safe as the least safe person on the team. Because what we have to recognize is that the stakes are higher for some people than others.
Mm.
For speaking up, for admitting mistakes, for asking questions. We don't all have the same capability or experience or safety nets that make it possible for us to take these interpersonal risks. That might come down to neurodiverse aspects. It might come down to cultural diversity, aspects of physical ability. We might not be able to speak. We might use a different language. We might use sign language, or we might, if we're in a team where you primarily communicate by a text or a message or something like that, if we're dyslexic, that might just might hold us back a little bit from using text in such an easy way as someone else. Or it might be past experience. Someone's joined the team and a few years back they were in a meeting and they suggested an idea and their manager absolutely ripped them apart for some, you know, and said, oh, that's a ridiculous idea, or said something like, oh, you should know that by now. Then even in a new team, even in a new context, a little part of their brain, there's going to be a little red light at the back of their brain going, oh, yeah, but you could speak up with that thing, but do you remember what happened last time? And
absolutely.
That
punishment of mistakes, bearing in mind the sort of range or grade of mistakes that you talked about before, at a time when businesses are looking to innovate, to think about new ideas and new opportunities, you know, the behavior is absolutely going to suppress things like innovation.
Mm.
Because
yep.
You don't want to be embarrassed or shot down or made to feel stupid or inadequate or anything in those sorts of confrontations. So, you know, there's a positive side to this stuff as well, right? It's having an environment where you are open to listening to people's suggestions, ideas, comments, pushback, whatever, however you want to call it, can only bring greater perspective and opportunity to a business, right? I mean, I would imagine that's something you preach on a daily basis.
yeah, exactly. And I mean, you use the word business, which is absolutely true. But this applies to any organization, any type of organization, essentially any group of people, and whatever. So any group of people with a sort of shared goal or shared objective.
Well, you're working with educationalists now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And in fact, education is an interesting one because you've got two very clear contexts in which educators work. You've got the classroom and outside the classroom. And teachers and educators are pretty aware. Like, it's like good classroom practice involves creating psychological safety for their students. otherwise, how can students ask a question or say, oh, sorry, I don't understand. Can you repeat that? I don't, you know, and in order to, you know, the explicit goal of a classroom is to enable the students to learn, and students can't learn effectively if they can't ask questions or ask clarifications or contribute effectively. So we know that fundamentally. But what's interesting in schools is that same dynamic isn't always appreciated outside the classroom, and sometimes we need to work on that and look at the sort of different types of behaviours and mechanisms that we need to adopt and understand outside the classroom with in our interactions with each other as teachers. But I think you also make a really good point about innovation and the need for businesses or organizations to succeed, because psychological safety, you can think about it as two ends of a spectrum in a sense, and all organizations sit somewhere or multiple points on the spectrum, really. At one end of the spectrum, we have organizations where almost the primary objective is to avoid things going wrong. And there you've got things like nuclear power plants or big financial institutions, or maybe healthcare in many ways, where you need to do the job, you need to get the stuff done, and you want to avoid stuff going wrong, because stuff going wrong results in really bad things happening, like everyone losing their money, or there being a nuclear meltdown, or people dying. Mm. At the other end of the spectrum, we have organizations who are really focused on innovation and doing, you know, like rapidly iterating and prototyping, trying out new ideas, and actually the cost of failure is much lower, and so we're trying to do new things and experiment as quickly as possible and identify and discover the best solutions. Psychological safety is the foundation for success for all of these types of organizations. It helps us avoid things going wrong. We've seen all sorts of disasters in the past that could have been prevented had people felt safe to speak up and say, I don't think this is safe, or that's the wrong engine you've shut down, or this patient's O2 stats are decreasing, or, you know, that raising concerns. And at the other end of the spectrum, we've seen organizations which could have succeeded, could have innovated faster, could have succeeded in the marketplace if only there'd been an environment where people felt safe to suggest those ideas that you discussed, the half-baked ideas, the ideas that aren't quite ready yet but could be something amazing.
Those are the ideas that you don't know until they come out. They never come out, you are never going to move forward. So I think it's incredibly important. And just thinking about the strategic use maybe of psychological safety here, we've seen organizations, businesses have to adapt a lot recently. Hybrid work, the ongoing digital transformation. I mean, we're talking obviously a lot about AI and society. Before we know it, society 5.0 will be on us. And I wonder whether, and I'm really interested in your view here, about how can psychological safety form some kind of strategic advantage for a business or an organization? Can it bring a competitive edge? Could it add resilience to an organization? What's your thoughts on that, Tom?
Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, whatever technologies emerge, whatever challenges the world brings, whatever changes in the marketplace, and whatever tools and, you know, whatever happens with AI and MML and everything else, organizations fundamentally will always be about people, and specifically the connections between people. Just as, you know, just as if you get a car and you lay it, or, you know, you take apart a car and you lay it all out in separate pieces, it's still a car. You've still got all the components of a car, but it won't work because they're not connected together. And an organization is made of connections between people. And so if there's friction or bottlenecks or, you know, challenges in communication between people and between the components of an organization, if there are fractures between people and teams, our organization won't work efficiently or effectively. And so we need to create an environment. We like to talk about the fabric of an organization. We like to talk about the psychological safety fabric that is within a team, but not just inside a team. Like, it's important to have high-performing teams within organizations that are psychologically safe and getting stuff done and innovating and admitting mistakes. But it's also that's great, but an organization isn't resilient and doesn't succeed purely based upon a few high performing bubbles within it. So we need to foster psychological safety between teams. We need to make sure that everyone in an organization can communicate with each other when required to do so in effective ways. We need to make sure that those boundaries between teams don't prevent effective communication as well. So yeah, it's this fabric that enables us within an organization to succeed and, like you say, be resilient, adapt, detect, respond to emerging threats or opportunities such as AI or such as COVID. You know, we saw when COVID hit, the organizations that succeeded through COVID were those that were more resilient, more adaptable, and able to not only identify that there is a problem, but work out ways to do something about it and adapt and change quickly as well. And that is fundamentally about the communication between people, the ability of people to suggest new ways of doing things and have those powerful conversations.
And if there's people listening to this show today, Tom, thinking, well, I've got some of these issues, I would love to release some of that latent potential in my organization. Mm. Where can people find out a bit more about you and what you do, my friend?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so if you head over to psychsafety.com, there's so much stuff there. We try and make sure that as much as possible is there for free. Our mission is to make the world of work a safer, higher performance, more inclusive and equitable place. And so we try and make sure that there's as much of that content available for free. So there's loads of articles, resources, downloadable resources. There's an online community you can join. There are meetups. There are workshops, all sorts of stuff you can get stuck into over there, which will help you solve your problems and improve your organization, whether you're in education, healthcare, aviation, or whatever you're doing.
I love that. I mean, this topic is so important and so huge, and we have touched so little of it today, but I've enjoyed all of it. And I love it when people come on and talk passionately about things that they believe and things that they are working on. And when those two things meet, it makes for great stuff. So thanks very much for coming on today, Tom, and sharing your thoughts and all your experiences with us. I really, really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it too, Andy. I've really enjoyed that. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. Absolute pleasure. Well, that was Tom Geraghty, guys. And that's just about all we've got time for today. So, if you're interested in finding out a bit more about Tom or psychological safety, you've got all the details there to go. And also, don't forget to visit engagementsuccess.org to check out all the show notes and all the fab free engagement resources, where you can also download or stream any of the great shows from our archive at your leisure, or even re-listen to this one. And we'll be back again at the same time next week. I'm Andy Gorham, and thanks for listening to Engage for Success Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.